G'day and welcome to another episode of the Luke's Lowdown podcast. That's right, we are talking to endurance athletes this series, and quite simply, it's all about what do they think about or the conversations they have between their ears during training, racing, and even everyday lives. And today, I feel very lucky to be able to spend this time with a good friend of mine, Dr. Rob Bell, who is a mental toughness coach, not only for professional athletes and collegiate athletes, but also for corporate and executive athletes as well. So who does he coach? Everyone, to be more mentally tough. He is the author of 7 books on mental toughness, is a keynote speaker, and a host of his own 15-minute mental toughness podcast, which I have actually been the guest on, and I'll put the links into the show notes. So apart from that, twice I've been on there as well, I want to admit that as well. So who is Dr. Rob Bell as an athlete? He's an Ironman triathlete, a 3:23 marathon runner, and completed several ultra marathons in his time. Most recently, he completed the Indiana Trail 100-mile race with 12,000 feet of climbing. That's 3.6 kilometers for all of you people out there who have no idea how many feet or distance it is. It was 4x25-mile loops. So here he is, the man, the myth, the legend, Dr. Rob Bell. How are you today, my friend?
Luke, my man, it's good to be here, man. I always love talking with you, buddy. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely fantastic. So I was thinking all day, how do I start this conversation with you? Because I know quite a lot about you. You've been on my podcast before. We've had a lot of different live chats, and my community knows a little bit who you are. So I'm thinking, how do I start this conversation and get this ball rolling? So I thought it was the right thing to do was to ask you, you know, you've literally wrote 7 books on mental toughness. So I want to start today's chat with, do you have a daily mental toughness training regime?
I do. When it comes to writing or just everyday life, man?
Everyday life, because we've got lots of athletes here, but also I know these skills can be transferable into everyday
life. Yeah, I think it's a couple of different things. One is, you know, I try not hitting that snooze button at all. When that alarm goes off, man, I try getting it up and going. I always say the first hour of the day sets the rudder for the rest. So how we start off that first hour of the day. And so I like getting up early, which requires us to, and as you've mentioned, get to bed earlier. And, you know, you kind of already have that plan about what it is that you're going to do for the next day. So I always get the run or the workout done in the morning, get that out of the way. That's probably the biggest thing, man. And from that, I think adjustments get made. They get tweaked in terms of how we can improve on that. I've got areas where I can definitely still have that better, but I'm a big firm believer in terms of a bulletproof morning routine.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Sets you up for the rest of the day. So your most recent adventure, let's call it, was the 100-mile race, the Indiana Trail, the IT 100. Using that same concept of setting you up for a good day, you know, not hitting the snooze and getting yourself going. In your training leading up to the Indiana Trail, what were some things that you did to get you mentally in the right place for, say, the long runs that you were going to do?
Good question, man. What were some of the things that I did mentally to get myself ready for the long runs? You know, discipline for me is not a problem. It's just not, right? It's like, what's the problem for me is stubbornness, letting go of mistakes. And, you know, I'd even say like self-belief. Like I wouldn't say I'm that overly confident, like in myself, when it comes to most things. I think there's some things, but so the discipline part isn't the problem. So I think it's just getting ready for them. It's just, you just do it, right? I mean, it really is when it comes to that. It's like, you just know what the plan is going to be and then just execute the plan. The toughest part was I'm not a details guy. Well, you and I both know then when it comes to these, if you want to go run 13 miles, it's really not that much you need to do, right? You can just roll out, stretch, and do it. But the details that it comes to then, you know, running 30 back to back, there's a lot of details that go into it in terms of obviously the hydration, nutrition, but the fact of the recovery post-wise. And that's what, you know, I gained a lot of information when you were doing the calendar club in terms of what was your routine when you would run 20, the next day you have 21, like you actually had that down. And I'm always learning from the best, man. I'm learning for you, buddy. So I'm like, what's that routine then kind of look like with how are you warming up, but then how are you cooling down and stretching? It's just all those little details. I thought that was the piece that I probably improved most on that than I'd say any area of my life. And that's probably what translated into the life skill. I think that I learned to it is all these minor details that you have to have can be overwhelming until kind of you get them down and then it would just kind of become second nature, you know, but that was the biggest piece, man. On learning from those long runs, all those small details that had to take place.
So I want to sort of jump on that thing, as you mentioned about, you know, when you try and create these plans for these races or even in life, they can become overwhelming. So when you're faced with, as you said, those back-to-back 30-mile runs, or even at a time which we're going to dive into the IT100, the nitty-gritty, I know you had a few setbacks and you know, we're going to dive into that in a second. But when you feel overwhelmed, when you have a lot in front of you, do you have a strategy, or what is the conversation? What keywords? What is it that that goes on inside your head to sort of acknowledge that how big it is, but not feel overwhelmed at the same time?
Yeah, that's a really great question. And the reason why I think it's a great question, because it requires the context and the circumstance, right? So it's like, I'm not like I said at the very beginning, my strength is not really like letting go of mistakes. So the fact of, if I'm 12 miles in and then I realize I'm already chafing and I don't have anything that's going to take care of it, well, that's a whole different skill of, let's say I finish the run and now I'm just kind of debriefing it that night in terms of what I can get better at. So the context is really important. And again, I'll quote Luke Tyburski on this, and to your listeners, right? They didn't set me up, but we learn from those that are better than us. And during your calendar club, you always talked about, you know, how do you become more efficient? And that's what I then would focus on. So let's say the mistake was made with not having, with I'm chafing again because it's so hot out here and I didn't have the right kind of shorts on. And I know it's already chasing, it's already becoming uncomfortable. And now you got 14 more miles still to go. Well, I can stay in that spot of being pissed off, being mad at myself, right? Resentment at yourself is really where it gets really difficult. You get resentful at yourself, like anger directed inward then becomes depression. And that just takes you down a whole spiral. When the fact is like, look, you got 14 more miles to go, not even 14 miles. You got this mile. How can you become more efficient with the chafing that's going to be there, but that's there right now? So it's like that kind of context piece. And then the bigger picture I look at, it's like, and you and I both spoke about this as well. Every single run that I would do, I would learn something about myself and about my situation. And when I shared that with you, you shared it, threw it right back. And you said, not everybody's like that. And I said, really? I just assumed everyone kind of did that debrief. And it wasn't necessarily on terms of like, hey, how was the run itself? But what did I learn? What did I do well? But what did I learn here?
And to jump in, do you have a process when you complete a run or a race that you go and do your debrief? Is there like a process or a three-step, five-step thing that you go through? Is it just something that you look at? No structure?
No structure, man. I'm sorry. I wish I could say there's five steps to it, but there's not. I'm jeans and t-shirt kind of guy. I would just sort of think about it and contemplate it. And I would put it in my notes. You know, when I was looking at the notes and everything, what was one piece that kind of jumped out about it? Because, you know, next training block, I'm going to go back and look at those. and see, hey, man, what did I do well? What did I learn? And a lot of it, Luke, you were on this journey, man. A lot of it was the hydration nutrition piece, man. It was so big. Like, what are the two things that are going to keep us from moving? It's going to be the hydration nutrition, or it's going to be like our feet, right? And that was probably the biggest part. I would just say the debrief, looking at it, and then just being able to write that stuff down. Writing it down is really powerful, because we've got to be able to go back and look at it.
Yeah, 100%. So to give the listeners some context, yeah, Dr. Rob and I had multiple conversations leading up to this race, these 100-mile Indiana Trail. And yeah, struggled with nutrition was the big thing. And sorry, struggled with hydration was more than nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
So during those training runs, when you just couldn't get that hydration right, you know, you tried different things. We had different conversations. You spoke with other professionals. In the moment when you're during your long run and you know it's not going right, like, where is your head at? What are the conversations you're having in your head during those times?
So I'm not the smartest guy, right? And the reason why I share that is because I just assumed when I would start to go downhill in my performance that it was in my mind. That it's like, well, you just need to focus on this mile, get your rhythm, it's going to be fine. And
you're a mental toughness coach. That's your crutch. You lean on that all the time, right? Because that's what
you're exactly. Yeah. And it works until it doesn't work. You know, and again, you can be the most mentally tough person that there is, right? But if you don't have sleep or your hydration or your nutrition is off, it doesn't really matter, because the cells aren't operating at its functional capacity. You know, it's like you can have the fastest car in the world, but if there's no fuel in it, it's not going to work. So like those building blocks, that foundation has to be there. And so in those moments, there really wasn't a lot of reflection. It was just, you know, you just find a way through this until I got to the point. And that was the thing. 16 different training runs that I had over a marathon distance, 13 of them I puked in. Like I said, I'm not the smartest guy, right? But 13, you would think I would start to pick up on it, but I had no idea about the amount of sodium that I would lose and simple, everything that goes into it with the magnesium and potassium, all that stuff that I would lose in those training runs. And I'm a 2x4 guy, meaning you got to take a 2x4 and hit me over the head with it for me to get it. And 13 different times. Now, the irony of it was, because I puked so many different times, when I did puke in the race itself, it really wasn't that big of a deal, because I kind of knew which kind of puke it was. I was watching, you know, documentary on Chad Robbins when Chad was talking about on one of his epic runs, he puked. And it kind of freaked him out a little bit, because he said, I just never puked in this. And I started laughing out loud, because I said, dude, I puke on every single run, man. You know, and obviously I'm not comparing myself to him, but it's like, if you've been injured a lot, you can handle injuries because you know where the bodies are buried when you get hurt later on. You know what I mean? If you never get hurt, first time you're going to get injured, it's going to be a pretty big deal. And so I know it's kind of a Magellan type route, just to kind of answer the question, but it's like, I really didn't comprehend a lot of it during. It was just find your rhythm, focus on this breath. You're going to make it, right? Like, we're not going to quit. We're not going to shorten the distance. But there were some runs that came down to that I could not finish because I didn't have the hydration down, and there was no amount of mental toughness. I didn't feel like walking 20 miles just to do it. It was only in being able to look at it afterwards and seeing, man, where I messed up and where I need to get better.
So you had that. Sorry, go on.
If I can elaborate, it got so bad that with my training, you know, with 2 months of training, it was just shit. It was awful. You know, there was no good parts to it. And I set a challenge to myself. And I'm never about testing yourself. I'm always about training yourself. But I tested myself. All right, man. We're going to run 50 miles, 50 miles, 4:30 in the morning. We're going to do it. We got a couple people that are going to join us. Here are the aid stations. And I puked at mile 28, really, really hot day. And I got to 31 and puked again. And it was after this that I didn't finish the run. And it was after this that I questioned myself, do you really want to do this run? Can you do it? Because what was the logical thinking? Logical thinking was, Rob, if you can't even make it 33 miles, how are you going to be running 100 miles, right? You're not even a third of the way. And again, well, the reality is that wasn't the race day, but that became a Fisher cut bait moment. It was going to be, Rob, you can be happy running 50 Ks or even a 50 mile, or is this something you really want to do? Because if it is something you really want to do, you have to be able to examine and keep looking back at all these failures you've had and how is that going to actually prepare you? And so I'm always about, it's not about the setback, it's about the comeback, puke and rally. I couldn't rally that day, but what became the most important one is I came back the next day and I put in a 20 miler, which was fine, but it's like, no, you are going to do it. If I didn't go back that next day, Luke, you know, I would have been mired in that, you know, self-loathing, self-pity part, and I wouldn't have been able to come back. But it was after the 20 miler when it's like, all right, man, you've learned from it here. Like you still got this. We're going to get better from it. You know, good training is going to be coming up. And that was the part I just needed to share, because I felt that was a huge lesson that I learned through it.
There are so many lessons in there, and I'm going to try and sort of recap a couple into, you know, in a really sort of brief couple of sentences there. As you said, like when you have those setbacks after that training run, and I remember we spoke afterwards and you had that conversation with yourself, is okay, do I really want to achieve this 100 mile race? You know, this is my goal, but do I really want to achieve it? And I know, and I'm going to quote you now, is and I'm going to paraphrase, and please correct me if I get this completely wrong, is if your why doesn't make you cry, it's not big enough. Is that right?
Yeah, if your why didn't make you cry, it's not your why.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
It's not big enough. You got it.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not like a crying. It can be, that can mean so many different things to individuals, but it's knowing that deep rooted why, and knowing that you have this emotional attachment to that why. And that's sort of like paraphrasing that quote that you have, and we've spoken about this before. So it's when we do have big setbacks, that not even in the main event, but even in training, it's important to go back and understand what your main why is, and what, obviously we're going to have several, but what are some of the really big whys? So then when you do that, is that just something you do internally, or do you go back to sort of writing that down and having your whys written down somewhere that you can go back and look at?
I think so. I think it's both. I think the bigger thing is we got to go back to the very beginning and look at what's the overall purpose? What's the bigger mission here? Because the bigger mission isn't necessarily about the race itself. It's about what the value is and the emphasis that we place on that value. And so the value that we place in our family and our side and our four walls is that you never give up. And so what was I going to be doing? Well, I was going to be giving up. And when you are all in our house, you're in. Doesn't mean you're going to be successful. That's not the point. The point is that you're all in and you're just not going to give up. You're going to give it the absolute best shot that you have. And then we get back to then your preparation. It doesn't mean just showing up. It means, are you putting everything you have into your preparation? If you put everything you have into the preparation, we can handle the outcome. We can handle the results. I firmly believe that. And so if it is never giving up, that was our foundation, then it's then knowing that it's not about the setback. It is going to be about the comeback. So even if this training stayed awful and the race went bad and it wasn't successful, that still wouldn't have been the end of the story. That just would have been another chapter in it. And the next, I mean, I just would have signed up for another one probably a little bit sooner than I did the next one, right? Because it's like it becomes just all part of that journey, and the failure and the setback just becomes part of that narrative. You know what I mean? So it's like no one ever runs 100 miler and then that's the last time they ever run, period. Like they run again at some point. And when we look at the toughest races, that there are no finish line. We have to be able to look at our own life in terms of that, right? In terms of the process, but in terms of there is no finish line, if there's just going to be these markers that we kind of set for ourselves, and they're all things that we set in our head. And then when we do that, though, that's when I think it allows ourselves a little bit of room to go ahead and experiment and fail and to reevaluate and then look at the values and then look at the why. Again, long answer for, but that's how I just kind of look at it in terms of this is a never-ending race. No matter what we're going to be doing, there are just these check marks and these mile markers. When we do that, it gives us space, I think, to work with that, you know, insecurities, the failures, the setbacks.
Yeah, I love that. And the thing that I got out of all of that was knowing what your values are as an individual, even as an athlete, and they can be combined, they can be the same thing, but knowing what your values are, because that is what's ultimately going to drive you and give you fuel alongside your whys when your back's against the wall. And yeah, that was just fantastic. You've got the values of your house, from your family. And
I'm not saying it's the best one, Luke, right? Never giving up is also a weakness, right? Because that means, you know, you are going to be putting yourself in these really difficult spots, but it's that which reveals itself to us. And the only thing that I do know is that skill right there is what pays off.
Mm. Yeah, that's so powerful. So let's move into the IT 100 now. Well, just before, yeah. It's a couple of weeks before race day. It's probably actually, you know, let's say that one of the times that we had a conversation. Are there certain things that you're reminding yourself, that you're dropping into your mind, that you're writing down from a mental training, you know, you're a mental toughness coach. Are there things that you're reminding yourself in the lead up, the couple of weeks or the week, I say race week as well, that you're dropping into your mind just to remember when you're about to set off from a mental toughness perspective?
So leading in, I had a 50 miler at the actual course itself, because I like to be able to be on the terrain that I'm actually going to be doing it in. And it was one of my best runs in terms of like the actual experience of the run, but I had developed then a big hip issue. So the last 3 weeks leading in, man, buddy, what, a week and a half before, it was a 13 mile run on flat, not pushing it at all. And my hip was in pain. And so then, you know, you got to be smart, right? It's like, you're going to be one of those idiots who is going to not, because again, is it like overtraining or underresting? You know, and I think a lot of times it's underresting. You're either going to be one of those idiots that's going to underrest, but it's a lot better to be underrested than it is to be overtrained coming to that line. So you got to be smart here. So the last 3 weeks, a lot of ambiguity in terms of my mental mindset, in terms of how is the hip going to hold up? You know, is it going to hold up? Because I really don't know. And funny how when it comes time, the body is going to listen, you know. And I kept telling myself, you're going to be ready that day. And I kept talking to my hip. I had the conversation with my hip. Hey, you know what's coming up here. Okay. And you know what the mind is here. So like, strong legs obey, weak legs command. Like, strong legs are going to listen to the mind, right? Weak legs are going to tell the mind what's up. And so that became a big part of it. The other part is, I mean, I just like to marinate my mind with watching other people that have done tough stuff. And it's like, here, man, I watched this guy do the ultimate triathlon. And look at what this guy's done. You know what I mean? Look at the hamstring issues he had. Buddy, you're doing you got 30 hours to finish this race. This guy's done it across 12 days. And then you watch other people that, you know, whatever it's going to be, right? They did Western States, man. You watch Chad Robbins navigate his own race. You watch Biggs Backyard Ultra. You watch people that have done really tough stuff. And when you watch people do that, it gives you confidence that, man, they can do it. I can do it as well. What is the skill that you have to have? You just can't give up. That's all you have to do is just keep moving. And then you put the whole strategies in place That's how I work on myself. And then it's just knowing, look, day of the race, Rob, you're going to be ready. Period.
Yeah. I love that. So you mentioned, you know, watching other people doing tough stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that, you know, call it inspiration, motivation, call it research, you know, whatever it is. There's going to be people that will say, yeah, like I watched that, but then I still have doubts, you know, but I'm not them. You know, I'm not as good as them. So what is a tool that maybe you could pass to some people who watch other people do big challenges, watch documentaries and follow online, but they still have those doubts coming into race day, even though they've got that inspiration, that motivation, they've done that research that people are actually doing these big things that they're chasing after. What is one tool that you could provide to them to sort of try and turn around that conversation from self-doubt to maybe curiosity or whatever you want to call it?
Yeah, it's a good question. So no matter what, there's going to be doubt. I know every athlete that has worked with that has an important competition coming up has doubt. It's going to be there. It's part of the equation. And then I just basically ask myself this, right? Like, how's that working for you?
Love it.
Does it really help that you focus on the doubt and the insecurity? Or do you use that in terms of, okay, if this goes wrong, right now it becomes planning. If this goes wrong, then here's going to be your strategy. If this goes wrong, then here's your strategy. So it's not pretending that everything's going to go great, right? Bad stuff's going to happen, but what's going to be your refocus cue? What are you going to have to get back to? So the fact that the doubt is going to be there, but now it becomes a choice. How much are you going to focus on that doubt? And then how much are you going to focus on the other voice that's telling you, you can do it, you will do it, this is the mission. And then it becomes a choice, which one you want to listen to, right? I've always felt that listening to the positive voice and the one that is going to be affirming and give you confidence is a much better voice to listen to than the one that's just going to continually ask questions and put doubt in there. That's the one where, yeah, there's a time and place for it, but unless you're working, unless you're using that as like a strategy tool, then it just really doesn't do you any good.
I love that. How is all the doubt working for you? It's not. And then, you know, like you know this more than I, and then what you just said is, you know, one of the old, not old, but a very well used sports psychology technique is if this, then that, you know, if this happens, then we do that.
Mm-hmm.
If this happens, then we do that. And I think, you know, this is something that I do a hell of a lot in creating scenarios leading up to anything, big races, big challenges, even training sessions. If this happens, even a positive or a negative, I go both ways, then I do that. And I think that's really important to not let the doubt, you know, if these people, the scenario that I created, not let the doubt these people are having leading up to a race sort of be too loud and sort of not give it too much time on stage, so to speak, but then sort of come up with a solution. Says, okay, if this happens, then I can do that. And it sounds like these are all the processes that you go through. These are the conversations. These are the scenarios that you work through leading up to the start of the race.
Yeah, man. And I noticed a difference out there when I would see people, and we could get into like the race itself, but when people would drop, I saw it and it was illuminating to me because you and I, you know, it's like, man, you try and pick them up and be like, come on, but they already made it up in their mind that they were going to quit. They already made it up in their mind. So there was no reaching them. And the only thing I could get back to is heading into that race, there was no, we're going to see how it goes. It didn't matter how the hip was going to hold up that day. Like if it was going to fall off, it was going to be broken, we're going to finish this race, period, man. That's it. I'm not saying it's the best. I just know that that's the best that worked for me. And if I coach anybody else up, that's what I coach them up on, is you have to have on the mindset that, because I saw it with the other people, and then I was at an aid station. I'm not feeling good either. You know, it's at 75, man. And they're talking about how bad they felt last time they didn't finish and how they were affected for weeks. And I'm thinking in my head, I got to get out of here. I can't listen to that stuff. They didn't finish. B, because they weren't in this moment and they had already reserved themselves to either making the picture way too big, man, thinking about what was going to happen afterwards. But I bet going into that race that it was going to be, look, these things have to go well in order for me to finish. And I just don't think that's the right mindset to heading into.
Yeah, that's really important. So that story just alluded to, I know it happened a couple of times where you had conversations with people who weren't in a bad place. Do you want to share that that experience, that story, and what, as you just said, you tried to get them out of the funk, you tried to get them out of the tough place that they're in. Can you share with us like what you said and what you tried to do to help them get out of that mental funk that they were in?
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely a talker out there. I'm an encourager. I think it's the best part about these races is the people that are in them, right? I mean, you cannot love on somebody in a race that you can in a supermarket line, you know, or at a subway stop. You can't. I mean, we're related on a whole new level of trying to do something so difficult that it begs us to make sure we're connecting with one another. And there's some people that can run on by and not really say anything. Just weird to me. I just never make any sense. I'm always thumbs up, waving, man, good job, looking all right. Sometimes I'll blow smoke, man. I'll be like, God, man, I did this in the marathon one time. I mean, not in the marathon, in the Ironman. I would run up to people, get in their face, be like, I know you. And they'd be like, oh, you do? I said, yeah, you're an Ironman. And to see their face light up and be like, yeah, yeah, you're right. I'm going to finish this. And I would do that same thing in this race, man. I'd be like, man, yeah, I know you. Like, you're the 100-mile finisher. And so I would just do that stuff. And so I'm always encouraging people and running by a couple of people, I just kind of check in. Hey, how's it going? You know, how are you doing right now? And the story and the narrative that was in their head was really negative. Oh, I'm not really doing well. And I'm going to drop. And not everybody, but I'm just sharing the ones that did drop. There was one who was definitely a stud, and she had rolled her ankle pretty bad, you know, but you could tell she was a stud. I mean, and in that circumstance, I kind of understand, you know, I kind of got it. And the others, I mean, they're all mid packers, and they had already reserved in their head that they had quit. And so I tried very briefly to bring him out of it. No, this mile, focus on this mile, just make it to the next aid station, then you reevaluate, you know the strategy. And it became pretty dismissive pretty quick. And so then what was my next action was I got away from him as quick as I could because I couldn't reach him. And you and I spoke about it. I felt remorse about that I couldn't reach him in those moments. And there were people at aid stations who were able to reach them. I don't know about them specifically, but they had reached other people. And they, you know, and that was why the importance of having great aid stations out there is because they were able to pull people out of it. They're able to refocus, get them out of their own head. Hey, you got to take 15 minutes here. Let's take 15 minutes here and reset. You know, don't worry about time. Don't worry about anything that's coming up. They were able to do that. I was not able to do that in the situation because I'm trying to do my own thing. And I felt remorse about that because I kind of prided myself on focus on helping other people in this race that gets me outside of my own head. And when I couldn't do it, I had to get away from as quick as I could. And then I actually tried using them as motivation. And I know it sounds callous, but I would have that conversation in the back of my head, be like, look, they're quitting, Rob, you ain't quitting, right? You're not going to be like that. And it was as simple as that, man. And it would kind of fuel me, give me that energy, that surge. And then we're back to the next mile. And here's the interesting thing. I didn't discover this till afterwards, Luke, but I didn't count the miles. I didn't. I focused on, I'm a big visual guy, right? You make it to the tree, man. You make it to this turn, right? You make it to this hill. And I didn't notice that at all. Like in the 50 miler, I counted the miles. Because it's like, oh man, at mile 38, right? This is as far as you've ever gone. I wasn't like, all right, mile, this is 67. This is as furthest you've ever gone. It wasn't like that. It was just make it to the tree, man. And that's how I operate best, man. Keeping that picture small. That's all I got to do because it's all I can do. But that really helped in that notion too.
Yeah. Keeping the picture small. I love that. So really simple, but I think it's probably It's maybe complex, maybe simple answer. I'm not sure. When things are going right, what do you think about during long runs, ultra marathons?
I get scared sometimes when things are going really well.
Why?
Because it doesn't last, you know? And I get scared because that's where my mental toughness needs to improve. You know, I'm like, okay, well, it's good right now. When I get in those moments, I just kind of pray and just focus on the gratitude and perspective because I've got it right now. And right now it's perfect. And it feels great. And thank you so much, God, for putting me out here in this situation. And the training, the process, more and more I look at it, it didn't really have anything to do with the race, man. It had to do with what was my favorite part. My favorite part was I love being on the trail at 5 a.m. in the morning when it's dark and it's cold and no one else is out there. It's the Elan, man. It's the sanctity. It's the most beautiful part of life. And seeing that sun come up and being in that moment and doing something tough, and you got everything you need, which is you and nature and being out there. It's beauty. And so when those moments and things are going great, man, I just try to be really thankful for it. And because it is about perspective, the same thing with life, right? Things are going with life, man. We got to make sure we take that pause and thank you for putting me in this situation that things are good. Who can I help? Who can I use this for right now? Because it's not always going to be like this.
No, I agree. Having gratitude when things are going well is almost like gratitude training for when things go bad or when things don't go to plan or when things go wrong, so to speak. If you can have pure gratitude when everything's going amazing, it is that way of, you know, training gratitude for when things are tough. So you do it when things are going well, and then you're able to set yourself up to actually have real gratitude when things get tough. And I think that is a potential bridge for you to get over those tough setbacks.
That's a mic drop, Luke. I can't add to that. It's beautiful, man.
All right, so let's talk about one of those tough bridges that you had to cross. You start off on a 100-mile race, okay? You start in the morning. You've got a bunch of other runners. You're in your element. You're with your people. You know, your tribe is there. I know what it's like at the start of 100-mile races. It's pretty somber, but there is a nice energy. It's like that slow sort of build. And you know you're out there for 100 miles. And then after only 8 miles, not even 10% of the race, because of the trail was a bit muddier and there were massive big puddles that you just had to run through. There was no choice. It's mile 8 and your feet are soaked. Mm-hmm. And I no doubt you probably went, man, this sucks. But what I want to know is, because it was so early on, where was your focus when after 8 miles, your feet are completely soaked and feel like they're already starting to blister up? Where was your focus then?
So it was on, because throughout this whole journey, there had been some runs too that, you know, feet had gotten wet, and not being a great athlete, always pride on myself that I'm a mudder.
A what?
The worst, a mudder, like a horse, right? A horse does better in the slop. Those are mudders.
Right.
And so I've always prided myself on that. Buddy, the worse the weather, the better, man. Like, it could be the worst possible weather. I want that stuff because that's better for me.
That's a great reframe as well, right?
Yeah. And it was, man, it was just like, you know, and it basically when those situations, right, everyone deals with it. And when you compare that to all sports, like in the arena, everyone's dealing with the wind, everyone's dealing with the rain, everyone's dealing with it. It's how you deal with it. And so the fact of, look, I'm not the only one that had to run through that. Everyone else is running through it. You just move on from it, right? And I got back to Tyburski 101, man. How can I be more efficient with the step or the stride or just being in the moment right here. And just knowing that, look, there was going to be some triage that happened at the main aid station that I was going to be at 25. That was probably my main focus, man. Those couple of factors.
That makes sense. So then, you know, you're moving along, things are going well. And as you already alluded to it and mentioned it in mile 45, just before halfway, you puked again. Right. Mm-hmm. And I want to take a slightly little segue just to provide a little bit of context, as you quite literally wrote the book on puking and rallying. Okay.
Yeah. So
that is one of your 7 books. It's the most recent book as well from memory.
Correct.
I've read it. It's quite a good book, and I've actually recommended it to a lot of people. So Puke and Rally is something, nice little plug. We'll put links in the show notes for all your books. But it's something that you quite literally wrote a book on. And one of the things that I love about your books is, you know what the book's about from the title. They're very descriptive. You know, like No One Gets There Alone is another one. The Hinge. You know, you can sort of see that, okay, there's a hinge moment in life, and these are just some of the books and the titles of them that you've wrote. So when you put yourself out there to say, hey, I'm writing a book on puke and rally, it's not about the setback, it's about the comeback. Like, you put yourself out there to say, right, okay, I wrote the book. Now at mile 45 for this race that you've been working towards for quite a long time, you puked. So How did you rally to make sure that you didn't make this event, this experience of puking, about the setback? And how did you turn that around and make that puking at mile 45 about your comeback to take the next step, run the next mile, and complete the next 55 miles?
Yeah. So I probably say the shutdown started to happen probably a couple miles before that, 42, 43. There's two different types of puking that happens out there in the races. One where it just kind of happens, but the other is it happens because you're dehydrated. And I just made it a point, I'm not going to get dehydrated. I'm not, because you and I spoke about it. Once you get in deficit with there, you can't come back. And so because I've thrown up on so many training runs, it actually prepared me to realize which throw up was this. When I threw up at 45, it was because it just gotten so humid and hot, you know? But I knew my hydration was right. I knew it was right. I knew it was good. It just got, you know, it was just overheated. And, you know, you got to put yourself, let's gear it down to second gear, right? Let's get to mile 50, because that's where the main aid station is. You got to do some triage. And I wasn't feeling good. But the two types of pukes are, you puke once and you feel better. We all feel better like right away, but it's like, how often does that feeling last? The feeling kind of left and I wasn't feeling great. So I wasn't quite sure which type of puke this was, to be honest. Get to 55, you know you have to drink, you know you have to eat, but you don't want to. Like, I don't want it to, because I don't want it to come up again. And so you just kind of take your time. It's just from 45 to 55 are really, really slow miles. I mean, it added a lot of time. I'm literally sitting there at mile 50, again, 4 loops. And I'm looking at the clock and I'm trying to tell myself, all right, Rob, you're going to take 15 minutes here. Let's just drink, rehab, and then you get going. And it became 30 minutes. I'm looking at the clock like, are we going to get going here, man? Like, what are you doing?
So you're having an internal dialogue at the same time as you're sitting there.
Yeah. Yeah. Same thing, man. Because, you know, I'm a competitor. You know, I don't like it when, you know, people that I've passed a long time ago are now coming through and like, you know, that stuff can kind of bother me. But I was able to kind of block that out. I was able just to focus on the time and getting back to neutral, getting back to okay. And, I just knew that once I started to get, what was the saving grace then? It was like at, 8 p.m. at night, it started to get a little bit cooler. And what was the saving grace was the chicken broth and chicken noodle soup, man. And I had it down where I was like, I'm going to chug the broth I'm gonna save the noodles and then kind of throw those down. And that became what my go-to was. And I had no fear of that coming back up, because if that came back up, that wouldn't give me a problem. But I knew in my heart of hearts, man, I did everything I could with the hydration piece, that that part was good. So if you're not dehydrated, it's just, you know, kind of a gut bomb that, you know, you're going to get past. That became going into the third loop. My fourth loop was faster than my second or third loop, just because of, you know, all you got to do is make it 25 more miles, right? It's like there was coming in at what, 2 a.m., 2:30 a.m. That stop was literally, you know, a 4-minute stop as opposed to a 30-minute stop at mile 50, you know? So it's like, and I just knew, it was like, everyone's going to have this. Everyone's going to have a dark spot. Not a problem. You've prepared for it. You've puked many times. You're going to be all right. And it's just knowing, look, it's better just to make sure you keep moving, you know, right? Like if you can hike at a 17-minute pace, well, let's just do that for a little while. And then you can jog a little bit, and then you can, you know, let's power hike these. And you just come to the strategy piece, man. It's problem solving, right? I mean, got that from you as well, man.
How to keep taking one step. You know, let's start with, okay, I'm not going to try and run at a certain pace. Let's just, not even going to run. Let's just see if I can just take one more step. And, you know, if we can be perfect in that one moment, i.e. just being able to move forward, then that's going to help us get to our ultimate end goal. And I love how you differentiated between the two types of puking. And I want to sort of highlight this for maybe a lot of other athletes, endurance athletes out there who maybe don't puke all the time, but during long races, 100 miles or even Ironmans, they get pain in their body. And immediately, because it's quite bad pain, they go, oh, I'm injured. So there is two types of pain. There's pain that's an injury, and there's pain that's, well, if you're doing an Ironman, if you're doing an ultra marathon, you're going to have pain. So I think what you said about understanding even before you go into it, or even when it's happening, okay, is this puke from dehydrated, or is this because I'm just doing a massive big race and, you know, it's a bit humid? Okay, try and get logic into it. So I think for other athletes, from a physical perspective, is, okay, my knee really hurts. Is this just because I've been running for the last 6 hours, or is there an actual problem here? And I think for people to actually stop and acknowledge that is going to help so many more people not turn the negative tap in their head on, to try and understand if it is just, well, because I've been running for 6 hours, or if there's an injury. So I thought that was really, really helpful that you can sort of stop and say, there's two types of pukes. Which one was this?
Yeah. I'm not the best to say that that's accurate.
No, but that's your experience to help you get right over that tough time.
Right. The only thing that I know to be a fact of, the goal was to finish, and no matter what, we're going to finish. You remove all the other plan Bs, all the other scenarios, everything else just gets thrown out when, look, this is your goal, you're going to do it. And the part that I found to be fascinating, because this is what I do for a living, right? I research this stuff, man. I go down the rabbit hole of looking at this stuff. And people that have dropped, and then when they were asked the next day, everyone says the same thing, man. Maybe I didn't have to. Not everyone, right? If there was a significant injury, they made the right decision. But everyone, man, looks back and says, man, did I really have to? And I did not want to deal with that voice or that part. And the only reason why I know that to be fact, too, is if you look at people that have gotten to the depths of their despair, to the fact of where they're going to take their life, and those that have jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge. In the United States, you know, a lot of suicides, unfortunately, happen there every year. Those that have survived knew the second that they jumped that they made a mistake. The second that they jumped, they said, I knew I made a mistake. Wait a minute. You already have it reserved in your mind, man, that, you know, it's not just, it just came, right? You're in the depths of everything that was going on, the second you jump, you knew you made a mistake. It shows us the power of, man, how we can get attacked and how we can become, a slave to those thoughts, that when we actually do it, it was a mistake. And that's the same exact thing then when it came to this run, right? The second that you're going to drop, it might feel better then, but you're going to hate it the next day, man, because of the demons that we all face and where that struggle comes from.
Yeah, that's very well put. So talking about the finish, when you saw the finishing line for the first time, do you remember and can you recall what was the first thought that came into your head when you saw the finishing line?
I need to take a little bit of a step back because, you know, even mile, 75 to 85 was like, okay. Like I was moving, you know what I mean? But it was like, you still need to kind of keep moving here and let's see how well you can do. So I knew with about 8 miles left that finishing like sub 29, I'm not saying it's great, right? I mean, again, there was 10 miles there, really slow stuff, but sub 29 was an option. I knew then at 3 miles left, that sub 29 could be doable. You got 45 minutes. If I run out right now and I run 3 miles in 45 minutes, I'm going to be like, okay, right? But in that situation, it's like, okay, 45 minutes, we can do that. And again, I mean, it's hills. You know, I knew there were a couple of still significant hills kind of coming up, some rolling hills that you got to power through. So I knew that was the option. So right away, bam, we got to set another goal. And I'm all about short-term goals. Bam, you can get sub 29. What do you got to do? And you throw everything out, right? Because it's like, you got 3 miles, man. I asked somebody with a half mile left what the time was. What's the specific time, sir? He said 10:54. And I knew I could get it, but I had to kick it in gear and I sprinted the last half mile. And how do I always finish every single run that I do, man? You always finish every single run with a sprint because that's how the 5K is going to end. That's how the 10K is going to end. You're going to pick people off in the marathon. You don't want people passing you at the end. You want to pick people off. And so that's how you end the training runs. And so, bam, I felt I was running like a 6 minute mile. It was probably like a 9 minute mile at that point, but I was in, man. I was sprinting past it. I was passing people. I didn't even know they were up there. I was passing people. And I gave it everything I had because I was going to empty the bucket at least. And so then when I saw the clock at 24, 25, then I knew coming down the hill, I wanted to grab my kids and have them run across with me. So I made sure that they ran up before I crossed the line, grabbed them, and we all crossed it together at 37 seconds. Bam, sub 29. In my own mental competitiveness, right? There's some people listen to and be like, I totally get it. Some people are like, I don't get it at all. That's how my mind works. I want sub, not around, you know, so sub 29. And in the big scheme of things, not a big difference if it was 29:01, but in my head, in that moment, that was the most important thing I could do.
Fantastic.
So crossing it too, it's like, it wasn't, oh my goodness, like I'm done. It really wasn't that. It was like, yes, there was an appreciation. Yes, it felt good. It was great seeing people. I got to stick around and watch everyone else finishing. I thought that was cool. I could stick around and just kind of appreciate the moment. That part was cool. Because my problem in life, what I struggle with the most, are these mountaintop moments. The mountaintop moments. We get on the mountaintop, bam, made it. Best feeling in the world. Right? Whatever the mountaintop is going to be, new client, metal, you're finishing. The problem with that is you have to come back down. And so I'm really, really, that's why I mentioned earlier, I'm really scared of really feeling good because I don't want to come back down off this feeling. I want to stay on the mountaintop, man. I want the pats on the back all the time, man. I'm an affirmation junkie. I want it like, oh man, that was the best interview I ever heard. I love that book. Like I'm an affirmation junkie. Once I start to get them, that's why I kind of seek out. It's a weakness. I admit it. I know what the demon is. So I try not to get too high. And if you don't get too high with those things, then you can't get too low. The higher you get, the lower you're going to go. So trying to keep it even keel, just trying to soak it all in and really like appreciate that moment and being in it. And because that feeling wears off. And then what you're left with is just the relationships and the connections you have with people. And so, you know, very first marathon I ever finished, man, I remember like tearing up and be like, yeah, man, it finished. Well, that feeling leaves. And if you build it up too much, it's going to be a harder come down. So I really reminded myself heading into this, it's about the process. It's going to be about the journey. It's not always about that finish. The finish is going to happen. The process, what are you learning about it? What are you learning about yourself, man? That became the mountaintop itself.
That's awesome, mate. Very, very nicely put. It's been absolute pleasure, Dr. Robbins. Always great to chat with you. And I want to ask you to share with everyone, where can people learn more about you and find your books on, you know, you've got 7 books on mental toughness. Where can they find you and come and connect with you?
I can tell you what the 8th one is about.
Let's keep that. Yeah.
Okay. You got it, buddy. My website is always the best, man. It's just drrobbell.com, drrobbell, or pukinrallybook.com.
Love it. It's been a pleasure, mate. I want to say thank you for dedicating some time to have this conversation. I'm super excited to share this with all of my listeners. And if you have a question, do reach out to Dr. Rob so he can, you know, provide some of the wisdom that he has shared with all of you today.
Luke, I got to share this, man. You're truly, you know, your heart and the people that you help in life is remarkable. The things that you do are incredible, but you put this on there, man. You help so many people like in life, you know, and it's, if we could just have a team of Luke Tyberskys around us, I think we have teams that become undefeated, man. I mean, you're that special of a human being, man. So thanks for having me on.
I appreciate it, mate. All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening to another episode of the Luke's Lowdown podcast. Remember, please like, share, and tell your friends about this series. It's all about what endurance athletes speak about. Have an awesome day.